Okay, so we are ready for some giver practice.
Okay.
And I'm going to read from my book because I like it better that way. But I haven't heard from anyone else wanting to join us, so I think it will just be you and I. So for anyone listening to our recording, I hope you will join our book group for The Giver by Lois Lowry. And we're scheduling, I have scheduled a few classes for chapter one, and hoping to get more loop members joining us. Expectation is that you will read before class, and we will read aloud some in class from your favorite sentences, paragraphs, answer questions, talk about what's happening. But today, it is just Gerard and I, and he has volunteered to help record the story for you. So I'm going to make him do most of the work. but maybe we can take turns reading sections, and I'll let you start. So, The Giver, Chapter One.
Okay. It was almost December, and Jonas was beginning to be frightened. No, wrong word, Jonas thought. Frightened meant that deep, sickening feeling of something terrible about to happen. Frightened was the way he had felt a year ago when an unidentified aircraft had overflown the community twice. He had seen it both times, squinting toward the sky. He had seen the sleek jet, almost a blur at its height speed, go past, and a second later heard the blast of sound that followed. Then, one more time, a moment later, from the opposite direction, the same plane.
Okay, nicely done. Unidentified.
Unidentified,
Many, many
unidentified.
little syllables there. hard to pronounce. To get us warmed up, I'm going to reread that first paragraph and then let you start with the second one, okay?
Okay.
So it was almost December, and Jonas was beginning to be frightened. No, wrong word, Jonas thought. Frightened meant that deep, sickening feeling of something terrible about to happen. Frightened was the way he had felt a year ago when an unidentified aircraft had overflown the community twice. He had seen it both times. Squinting toward the sky, he had seen the sleek jet, almost a blur at its high speed, go past, and a second later heard the blast of sound that followed. Then one more time, a moment later, from the opposite direction, the same plane. Now, I have a reaction when I read that every time. I remember my childhood and the sonic boom of jets that would go by really high. They would have a almost like a car backfires. They would have this sound, but they didn't scare me. And I read this and I wonder why I'm supposed to feel scared. So why is he scared?
Yes, because that's he's not used such technology. People on this village, they don't have any technology, so
So no.
they
That's what you're thinking is as you read this, that they don't see such things, so this jet is a scary creature.
Yes,
okay.
because jets, when they overcome the speed of the sound, there is a blast.
Right. Yeah, so the
Okay.
scientific explanation. Nice. Okay.
At first, he had been only fascinated. He had never seen aircraft so close, for it was against the rules for pilots to fly over the community. Occasionally, When supplies were delivered by cargo planes to the landing field across the river, the children rode their bicycles to the river bank and watched, intrigued, the unloading and then the takeoff directed to the west, always away from the community.
So when you read that short paragraph, I have two parts underlined as important for me to pay attention to. So what two or three or more things seem important to notice from that paragraph for you?
That overflying the village was against the rules for pilots?
Yeah, against the rules, that's what I underlined. Uh-huh. And?
And when the children rode their bicycles to the river bank.
Ah, okay. I didn't underline that, but that's will come back later in the story, so that's good that your mind thought of it. And anything else?
The supplies were delivered by cargo planes.
Ah, okay. Cargo planes. Okay. For me, I underlined against the rules and always away from. So there seems to me to be some significance to the fact that the takeoff is always to the west, always away from the community. So I underlined against the rules and always away from. The first time that I reread this a few years ago to use it for a book group. So it's interesting sometimes to me to compare notes paragraph by paragraph, because what talks to each of us can be different. Want to try the next paragraph?
Okay. But the aircraft a year ago had been different. It was not a squat, fat-bellied cargo plane, but a needle-nosed single-pilot jet. Jonas, looking around anxiously, had seen others, adults as well as children, stop what they were doing and wait, confused, for an explanation of the frightening event.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to try that one again. And the second sentence and the last sentence, I guess that's that third sentence is a long sentence, but try that paragraph again.
But the aircraft a year ago had been different. It was not a squat, fat-bellied cargo plane, but a needle-nosed single-pilot jet. Jonas, looking around anxiously, had seen others, adults as well as children, stop what they were doing and wait, confused, for an explanation of the frightening event.
Nice. Nicely done. Then all of the citizens had been ordered to go into the nearest building and stay there. Immediately, the rasping voice through the speakers had said, "Leave your bicycles where they are."
Instantly, obediently, Jonas had dropped his bike on its side on the path behind his family's dwelling. He had run indoors and stayed there alone. His parents were both at work, and his little sister, Lily, was at the child care center where she spent her after school hours.
Do we know, I'm already forgetting, do we know at this point how old Jonas is? I don't think so. I don't think we know how old he is. But we now know he has a younger sister. And in prior classes, almost everyone who's been in class is able to remember a time when they were home alone at a young age. Do you remember do you have a memory of a time when you were young and alone?
Yes.
So here he's dropped his bike and went inside. Something scary going on outside and he's home alone. You okay to continue?
Okay. Looking through the front window, he had seen no people. None of the busy afternoon crew of street cleaners, landscape workers, and food delivery people who usually populated the community at that time of day. He saw only the abandoned bikes here and there on their sides, an upturned wheel still revolving slowly.
So there were several bikes that were just left on the side of the road, dropped on their side, and on one of the bikes, there was an upturned wheel that was still revolving slowly. So he saw only the abandoned bikes here and there on their sides. An upturned wheel on one bike was still revolving slowly. That when I read that and learned that they made this into a movie, that's the scene I would start with. I don't know what they did. I still have not watched the movie, but I can visualize that as a very effective scene. Because we're on audio and not showing the text here, it's important to the book to realize that street cleaners, landscape workers, and food delivery are capitalized as proper nouns, so they are positions of distinction in this story. So when you look out your window at a busy time of day, do you see street cleaners, landscape workers, and food delivery people?
Not really.
Yeah. But in the story, everyone's got their job, and these are some of the positions.
Yes, and they look that they are easy recognizable.
Right, the terms, the names are very simplified and to the point.
He had been frightened then. The sense of his own community silent, waiting, had made his stomach churn. He had trembled.
So he's home, alone, scared. Something's wrong out there.
But it had been nothing. Within minutes, the speakers had crackled again, and the voice, reassuring now and less urgent, had explained that a pilot in training had misread his navigational instructions and made a wrong turn. Desperately, the pilot had been trying to make his way back before his error was noticed.
Was noticed, yeah. So misread, present misread here. So that had explained, past tense, that a pilot in training had misread his instructions. So in this crazy place that the giver is based in, there are loudspeakers that talk to you all day long, and in a rasping voice said, "Leave your bicycles where they are." But now back in a calm voice, reassuring voice, less urgent voice, pilot made a mistake. This reminds me of school. It's like you're in a permanent school where the loudspeaker is telling you information that you need to know. I don't think I would like to hear it all day long. Do you have loudspeakers at work?
No, not really.
I think it would be an odd feeling to have that 24/7. So here the speaker says, "Needless to say, he will be released," the voice had said, followed by silence. There was an ironic tone to that final message, as if the speaker found it amusing. Needless to say, he will be released. Maybe that's closer to how it was spoken. And Jonas had smiled a little, though he knew what a grim statement it had been. For a contributing citizen to be released from the community was a final decision, a terrible punishment, an overwhelming statement of failure. I don't like this place when I read that paragraph. Ominous.
And I have my Kindle, the book in my Kindle, and this sentence, this last sentence, is highlighted for many people. It's important.
Right, right, yeah. So I underlined released and that last sentence. I starred rather than underline the whole thing in my notes. Yes. For a contributing citizen to be released from the community was a final decision, a terrible punishment, an overwhelming statement of failure. And he's home alone, knowing this. Grateful, I guess, that it's not him that's released.
Okay. Even the children were scolded if they used the term lightly at play, jeering a teammate who missed a catch or stumbled in a race. Jonas had done it once, had shouted at his best friend, "That's it, Asher, you are released," when Asher's clumsy error had lost a match for his team. He had been taken aside for a brief talk by the coach, had hung his head with guilt and embarrassment, and apologized to Asher after the game.
Ah, nice. Yeah, so you're not allowed in this place. A release is serious, so you can't use it in jest. You can't use it in play. So then, yeah, that's it, Asher. You're released. It's not allowed. Jonas called over and yelled at and hung his head with shame. To hang your head with shame is a very common collocation. And here, hung his head with guilt and embarrassment. And apologized to Asher. So now we have Ashers. We have Jonas, his sister, some jobs, and now Asher as characters that we're beginning to be introduced to.
Okay. Now, thinking about the feeling of fear as he pedaled home along the river path, he remembered that moment of palpable, stomach-sinking terror when the aircraft had to strike above.
So streaked above.
Streak.
And streaked. Strike is a different verb, different meaning.
Okay, I see. Had to streak above. It was not what he was feeling now with December approaching. He searched for the right word to describe his own feeling.
Nice. Searched. Pronunciation. Palpable. Palpable is used as one of my favorite words. I don't know why, but I like it. Maybe because it has P-P-L-L-A-A.
Palpable.
And it's so busy, throbbing. You can touch it. You feel like you can touch it, even though you really can't. But so he's having a moment of recollection of that horrible feeling. Ugh, palpable. Scary. So scary you can see it. Ugh. So he's thinking about this as he's pedaling home along the river path. So, but he was home. Wait a minute. Before we were hearing about his memory, and at that point he was home alone. So now he's somewhere else. This is another day or another time, and he's on his way home along the river path.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jonas was careful about language, not like his friend, Asher, who talked too fast and mixed things up. Scrambling words and phrases until they were very recognizable and often very funny.
So Jonas grinned, remembering the morning that Asher had dashed into the classroom, late as usual, arriving breathlessly in the middle of the chanting of the morning anthem. When the class took their seats at the conclusion of the patriotic hymn, Asher remained standing to make his public apology, as was required. So they chant their anthem. We had to sing the anthem every morning in school, but not chant it. Did you have a song that you sang every morning at school?
No, I think during the dictatorship they have some anthem, but after that we didn't.
So we used to have to pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. We had to do that every morning, and for many years we had to sing our national anthem. Mm. But I don't remember ever chanting anything except A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. That we would chant together. But so here they have to chant their anthem. And then if you're late, you have to stand up and be embarrassed publicly. So here's Asher.
Okay. I apologize for inconveniencing my learning community.
I think we should try this on loop. When Holly's late for class, she says, I apologize for inconveniencing my learning community.
Asher ran through the standard apology phrase rapidly, still catching his breath.
Ah, so try it again rapidly. I apologize for inconveniencing. Try it as if you were catching your breath.
The instructor and class waited patiently for his explanation. The students had all been grinning because they had listened to Asher's explanations so many times before.
So here's Asher. I apologize for inconveniencing my learning community. He's standing there, trying to catch his breath. I left home at the correct time, but when I was riding along the hatchery, the crew was separating some salmon. I guess I just got distraught watching them.
So the word, it would be reoffending. A person who repeats the same.
A reoffender. We usually use a repeat offender.
Repeat offender, okay.
A repeat offender in criminal language. A repeat offender. Mm-hmm. So Asher is a repeat offender.
Okay. I left home at the correct time, but when I was riding along near the hatchery, the crew was separating some salmon. I guess I just got distraught watching them.
Salmon here is a very expensive, and I like salmon, a fish that many people eat. Do you know the name salmon?
I don't know if it's
the same. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here, though, were live fish, and Asher apparently did not like the fact that some of the salmon were not going to survive or might be going to someone's plate instead of to splash around in the water.
I apologize to my classmates, Asher concluded. He smoothed?
One syllable and voiced, smoothed. Smoothed.
Smooth.
Smoothed his rumpled tunic.
Smoothed his rumpled tunic and sat down.
So tunic is a type of clothing. Mm-hmm. Top is the top that he's wearing. Sounds like a uniform, a shirt. When I read it here, tunic instead of shirt, my mind thinks that this is probably a uniform that he has to wear.
Yeah, I think a tunic is like a long glove. How to say?
Like many athletes wear?
A gown, a dressing gown.
Of a gown. Many of our summer sports athletes wear tunic tops, or in gym classes, we used to have uniforms that were a tunic top and shorts for bottom. So it's like a very long shirt, usually sleeveless, sometimes short-sleeved. Tunic, in my mind, is the top worn over pants, a shirt that's worn over pants, but no buttons down the front. It's a pullover A tunic mm-hmm. is usually in my mind. But when I read that instead of a shirt, I'm imagining that we are going to learn that it's a uniform of some sort. So now the whole class has to say, we can say this together, Gerard. We accept your apology, Asher. So now we can try this on in loop. So when we have a group class and Holly's late, you can say, we accept your apology, Holly. The class recited the standard response in unison. And that's a phrase I underlined. That's a good collocation to learn, in unison, all together. Many of the students were biting their lips to keep from laughing. We accept your apology, Asher. So poor Asher gets made fun of.
I accept your apology, Asher, the instructor said. He was smiling. And I thank you, because once again you have provided an opportunity for a lesson in language. This trot is too strong an adjective to describe salmon viewing. He turned and wrote this trot on the instructional board. Beside it, he wrote distracted.
And of course, you know, I like that paragraph because it's teaching vocabulary. But I would say that distraught and distracted are very different meanings. Mm-hmm. So I used the explanation before when he said he was distraught, was that maybe he was watching the fish being separated and some of them were going to die. So he was distraught. The fish, save the salmon. But now he was distracted, so he was just having fun watching what was happening at the hatchery, and he was distracted from what he was supposed to be doing, which was getting to school on time. So now we have to find out which one is correct. So it's not really too strong an adjective, it's just a different meaning. So it's the wrong adjective to describe salmon viewing, unless the meaning is different. So the instructor is assuming he knows what Asher meant.
Jonas, nearing his home now, smiled at the recollection, thinking still as he wheeled his bike into its narrow port beside the door. He realized that frightened was the wrong word to describe his feelings. Now that December was almost here, it was too strong an adjective.
Okay, I'm going to actually ask that we stop now and hang up again, and I'll call back, because if I have half-hour recordings, they might be small enough to upload directly to Loop. So I'll call you right back, okay?
Okay.